Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Flat Nickel Podcast. I am your host, Hannah Nawa, joined by my always producer and occasional co-host, Mr. Sam Fritz.
Hello, everybody.
Sorry if the audio quality of this quick little intro isn't up to par. We are recording on my iPhone as we are about to pack to go to New Hampshire and then Connecticut for another interview.
You know, this is what I've recorded every intro and outro on so far, right? So
then the audio quality should be fine. I thought you recorded it on a different microphone.
Nope, I've been using this on my phone the entire time.
Well, then we should be fine. Welcome back to Banter with Hannah and Sam. So this interview is with Matt Wheeler. He is a local songwriter who has an extraordinary amount of touring that he does. And has just a lot of experience with booking and the business side of things when it comes to the industry and when it comes to staying independent in the industry.
Local to Lancaster, Pennsylvania, we should say. You know, for our international listeners.
Yeah, he's not local everywhere.
He's not local everywhere.
Because that's how locality works.
If we ever do merch, that'd be a good shirt. These artists aren't local everywhere.
I'm local somewhere.
Ooh, that's also good. That's better.
Can this be considered our copyright for that?
No. Well, maybe. I'm going to have to look up the law real quick.
Anyway, we had a really great time talking with Matt. Shout out to Sam's sister for letting us use her basement to record this interview. We had a really great time talking with Matt about the industry and touring and booking. And it was just a really great interview. I think this is probably one of my favorite interviews that we've done because it's been just really informative.
Yeah, it was a great interview. Matt was a really well-informed guy. He spoke, you know, to great length on, you know, how he develops his merch, what he uses to market himself, and also what it's like to go, you know, international. Like, he's our first artist, I believe, that we've interviewed that's... No, Roebuck played outside of the United States. Roebuck and then Matt Wheeler, they have both played in Canada.
Because Canada.
With that said, what do you say we start the interview?
Yeah, because we don't have written down for the set the scene, so we're just going to jump right in, guys. All right, well, I think we're mainly going to talk a little bit about your touring and mm-hmm. your booking. And sure. My father says hello, by the way. Oh. Mike says hi.
So Mike and Judy, I said hello back. But what's the name of the podcast? I'm just curious.
We're doing the Flat Nickel Podcast. I have a management company called Flat Nickel Management.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of our umbrella brand that we do all of our projects under. So
nice.
The Thought Lot is technically run by Flat Nickel Management. Okay. And we've done tours for bands. We've done merch. We've designed merch for bands. We've mm-hmm. Done music videos, and so it's kind of all under that umbrella. And then we started the podcast 2-3 weeks ago.
3 weeks ago, and then we did two interviews back to back, just like we're doing now.
Nice.
We pretty much just decided that you know, we've met all these artists, and everybody has such a unique story, and this mm-hmm. is such a very weird industry to be in, especially at the independent level,
right?
That we wanted to be able to share those stories, and you know, hopefully, if people can learn something from it, whether that's, hey, this is why you should be supporting independent artists and not just, you know, going out to a bar or going to big concerts or mm-hmm. you know, support local live music, or if it's, you know, local artists or smaller artists can learn, hey, if you're touring, take Metamucil because you're going to be eating a lot of bread. that's been like my favorite tip so far.
That's pretty great.
Take Metamucil because it's going to be a lot of bread and long days on the road. So,
Yeah. That's probably solid advice. You know, you never know, we're going to be able to stop in the bathroom and things. Yeah. I wouldn't have thought to suggest that.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Your next tour. Bring Metamucil.
This weekend, I'm going up to Boston, Montreal, and New Haven. So, I mean, I know what to pack, I guess.
Yeah, Metamucil. Nothing else. Just Metamucil. Don't pack anything else. Just Metamucil. So, whenever I think of you, or whenever I think of independent artists building tours, you're the person I think of, because it seems like no matter when I log on to Instagram or when I log on to Facebook, you're somewhere else that's not here.
I also post a lot when I do travel.
Yeah.
I document it a lot. Like, and sometimes I'll be on like a 3-day tour, but I'll like have things, like one thing I'll post in real time for some cases. And I'll even put like from Saturday, from Sunday.
Yeah.
But yeah, like also ran into people, like I ran into someone at work who was like, it's like, wow, it looked like a great tour you're on. Just get back. And I had been back like maybe 3 or 4 days. And I was like, oh no, I got back on Sunday. And it was only a 3-day tour. He's like, that was only 3 days? I was like, yeah. It looked like more, apparently. But
how often do you do those runs outside of the greater Pennsylvania area?
It varies. It's usually, I mean, if you're counting things like 2 or 3 stops, then it's probably 4 or 5 times a year. Okay. Something like that. So, not to mention occasional, like, just one-offs that are... I was supposed to be playing in Worcester, Massachusetts last Tuesday, and I literally drove through like the outskirts of a tornado. There was some that struck just north of New York City, and then I was stuck in traffic in Connecticut so badly that I didn't actually make it to the show. I had to cancel. So I ended up doing 12 hours of driving with no show.
I feel like that's
that was not great.
I feel like that's a good reason to cancel a show. Like, hey, traffic from a tornado, yeah. Not going to make it.
Well, it's like I'm 8 hours into a 6-hour drive, and my GPS keeps backing it up, and it looks like I would arrive, or maybe at best, around the time the show ends. They totally understood, but that is a rarity. It's very rare I have to cancel something, but that was a pretty good reason, and it was kind of a crazy idea to start with, to drive 6 hours and play, and then go back the next morning, but... It maybe could have worked, but it just didn't.
On average, how many shows are you playing per year?
Last year was 98, so in the last 3 years, probably 85 to 90 or so.
And are most of those within a couple of hours of here, of Lancaster?
So it varies. Like I'd say I have something like... probably like 60 or 70% are like in the region, like Lancaster, like Harrisburg, Philadelphia, Gettysburg, and such. But yeah, I get out of the area a lot more in the last couple of years. Did we start yet, by the way?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. we've been recording. Yeah. Well, we were gonna.
I was thinking like we should be recording this. Mm-hmm. So we can give the questions. But... which you can edit out or you can totally leave it in. It might even be funnier.
Yeah, no, sure.
As far as booking goes,
mm-hmm.
obviously, when you started out, you were probably most likely playing local shows.
Yeah.
At what point, because you said you're going to be playing Montreal soon, mm-hmm. right? Will that have been the second time that you've done Canada?
Yeah, last time was last month.
Okay.
Actually.
I remember that from... Mm-hmm. his interview with you.
Yeah.
How did Canada get thrown into the mix? Because that seems like, it doesn't seem like an uncommon market to break into. We've spoken to Roebuck, so that they're playing festivals in Canada.
I'd say it's just an out of the way market, you know.
It's a bit of a hike.
it's a hike, but it's closer than say Nashville by like 3 hours or Chicago, or I mean it's probably around the same distance. It's only slightly farther than Boston. I guess I could, that how I wound up playing in Toronto and Montreal specifically, in these cases, is like, it goes back to like how I book tours in the first place, which is I usually have like an anchor date, like something I'm either asked to do or like a festival I'm going to be playing. And then to make it worth my while, I'll see like, you know, okay, so what do I know? Who do I know in these cities, like anywhere in reasonable driving distance? Mm-hmm. So in the case of Toronto, I had booked with So Far Sounds Rochester, which So Far Sounds is great, and they're worldwide. You're guaranteed a fantastic show, no matter if it's in a motorcycle garage or a bakery or vintage boutique or wherever else it is. So I had been talking with So Far Rochester, and we finally, like, they threw out a date and I could do it. So I was like, what else am I going to do around this? And I was looking all over the place, including like Buffalo and and even like over to like Burlington, Vermont, and I've been back and forth. I have some friends up in Toronto that I met at Philly Folk Fest, the Young Novelists. So, if they're listening, hi, Graydon and Laura. But so they gave me a bunch of leads. None of them ended up working out at the moment. And then I remembered there was someone I had met at a conference out in Chicago, a music conference out in Chicago, who lived in Toronto. I saw him post on Facebook about something unrelated. And I was like, hey, would you be interested in like playing a show together? He's like, yeah, my roommates and I have this great house. And so why don't we, we'll start the concert series then, and my band will play, and you can play, and it'll be great. And it was, because Rochester to Toronto wasn't that far. Then I booked another show, a So Far Sounds show in Pittsburgh, the following day. So there was a lot of trial and error that went into it, but it ended up working out really well for like just three consecutive days, where it was like Toronto, Rochester, Pittsburgh, and then home. So why Toronto? It's because it was fairly close to Rochester. It was the next, it was another major market fairly close to that.
When you're booking, what kind of places are you looking to get into? Or is it just kind of whatever will have me, whatever?
Well, it's a little bit of whatever will have me, but I try to make sure it's like worthwhile too. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure there are countless coffee houses or bars that I could have booked in like with that particular tour, like in say Buffalo or Cleveland or something. But I wanted to make sure it was like a good listening room experience if possible, mm-hmm. which is why, again, So Far Sounds True is, we're not sponsored by them, but I mean, hey, it's like they're doing wonderful things for independent musicians. You can't do promotion because they're secret shows. Mm-hmm. They're invite only, and they make sure they have a full room, whatever size room that is. It could be 30, it could be 80, or any other number. Mm-hmm. So now when I'm touring, I pretty much look and see if I can play a So Far show anywhere in the area. But also, house concerts are good things I look for. And if there's other like venues or anything like a listening room that have been recommended by musician friends, if possible, I try to, sometimes book shows with friends or musicians so they automatically have their draw. And I'm not just like, hey, I drove all the way from Pennsylvania and here I am 8 hours from home and I'm playing in the corner of a coffee house and playing for tips. It's like, that's not a great experience usually. I try to set myself up for success that way.
Mm-hmm. Whenever you're playing in a market that you're not particularly familiar with, mm-hmm. how are you, obviously you just said with So Far, you can't really do a lot of promotion because they're secret shows and they're invite only. But when you are embracing a new market, or even for example when you came out and you played Shippensburg for the first time, how are you marketing yourself? How are you marketing yourself at the show so that you can hopefully gain a following for next time? Mm-hmm. And how are you marketing in advance to hopefully get people to come out?
I use social media for that sort of thing a lot. I know that it's harder to get it's hard to get an organic reach with Facebook now because now they want you to pay for mm-hmm. all that sort of thing. And occasionally I use Facebook ads, and actually I think it was one time when I was playing in Chicago a year or two ago, like I took out a Facebook ad that, was targeted toward that area. You're probably gonna catch a lot of extra fans that way, but yeah, I try to book at places where there's going to be at least some kind of built-in crowd. And then when I'm there, my style is really interactive. Mm. And some people might say like, it's like I work in some sort of, it's something between stage banner, like stand-up comedy and like a campfire sing-along all like mixed together. And one of the things I do, if it's a really great listening room audience, like a So Far Sounds show or a house concert, I'll actually pass around my email list.
I was going to ask if you have an email list.
I have an email list and I pass it around at the show, and I have it automated. I have it through MailChimp, and I have it automated such that when I add an email address, which I can do right from my phone, then they get this email that says, thanks so much. It was great to meet you. Here's some free music. They can get a download and they're pointed to where they can listen to us on Spotify. And then I usually, the nice thing about the email list is They usually have their first and last name on there. Mm-hmm. And if I interacted with them at the show, you know, if there's some sort of meaningful interaction or even just like, I'll often go on Facebook and like, you know, plug in the person's name. And, you know, if we've got some mutual friends, I'll friend request them too. If it's right after the show, then, you know, it's not going to be like, whoa, who's this stranger? It's like, oh yeah, it's the guy from the show on Friday. And then I'll actually make a Facebook friends group. Like I've got one for Toronto now. You know, I've got maybe 15 or 20 people in that. So if I go back to Toronto, I know who I'm going to say that I'm going to tell that I'm playing. Or if I want to do another house concert, you know, I might like, you know, hey, remember that cool house concert that we experienced, you know, back there, you know, a few months ago, I was thinking of doing something like that again. We'd be up for hosting or know someone who might be. Like, you know, it's with social media, it's a lot easier to find people in a non-creepy way. I mean, you know, they sign my email list. I figure that they're also at least somewhat interested in what I'm doing. And so, I try to use those tools. One other thing I've been doing at shows is I've got a good listening audience. I'll actually, from stage, I'll tell them, I'm gonna do a quick video of like just panning video of everyone from stage. And so just act real excited and cheer. And then, you know, I'll post this and, you know, so then they can see themselves too. Mm-hmm. If, you know, we find each other on Instagram, let's say, then, you know, they can go ahead and, you know, there's that much more of a link. Like there's a reason for why they would want
to follow.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's engagement then follows beyond just, you know, hey, cool show. I'll buy a CD. Mm-hmm. That's fine. But there's nothing like lasting after that necessarily.
You brought up SoFar Sounds and MailChimp. Mm-hmm. So a lot of technology, social media, a lot of technology that's really active in your career. Are there any other, just while we're on the topic, any other sorts of technology, software, apps, whatever that you have been using that help you as an artist or, mm-hmm. you know, planning a tour?
Yeah, I would say there's a few. I mean, I use Instagram a lot. And actually, especially when I'm touring, I'll document the various tour stops. And if I'm like, you know, visiting, you know, a local landmark or, you know, eating something, you know, if I'm eating poutine in Canada or something, I'll take a picture, or eating at Tim Hortons or something, I'll post a picture and such. So I mean, Instagram's definitely one. I have linked over to my Twitter, which is linked to my Facebook, so it goes to all those places with one post. And MailChimp, I've been using that for years to build my email list.
Does MailChimp have an app?
They do.
Okay, I didn't know that. I'm going to download that because that's going to make my life a lot easier.
Yeah, because then you can pull it up and then they have a pretty easy function when you bring up your list. Then it just has a little plus sign up, or no, well, like a stick figure and a plus sign. You press that, and then you can add right there in like two touches. You can add someone to your email list. I use Bands in Town as well. Like that's handy for show listings, and I have that linked to my website, MattWheelerOnline.com. Like the shows tab. From there, like just I just have the custom URL like imported there. So whenever I put a show on Bands in Town, it shows up on my website and on Facebook and any other place that can pull from there. So let's see. As far as other stuff that I use that tends to help me, I was looking at my phone, the music tools. I have an actual category called that. Let's see. I mean, I would say the music memos is handy. That's more from like the creative standpoint. Like if I have an idea for a song, of course there's voice memos and there's GarageBand, but music memos is like a combination of the two, where, you know, you can actually use some of GarageBand's features, but it's a lot more informal, you know, more like a voice memo. Beyond that, I mean, a lot of Facebook. Email is what I use almost exclusively, you know, for booking. Sometimes Facebook Messenger. Some places, you know, hate when you use that. Other places, that's the only way they'll respond.
That's the only way that you can contact some places is through Facebook. And it's really, sometimes it's actually really good because I've definitely had places that have an immediate response
mm-hmm.
through Facebook Messenger, whereas if you try and reach them through email, it takes, you know, weeks.
Yeah.
But it is a weird thing, I think, because we're so used to booking through email exclusively.
Yeah.
That when someone's like, yeah, just contact us on Facebook, it's like, this doesn't feel right.
Yeah. And, like, one of the places I'm going to play on this next tour up at Club Passim in Boston area, like, Matt Smith from there, he's great with answering email. Like, his Facebook, personal Facebook profile specifically says, like, you know, in the bio where you, like, make some little clever comment about yourself, he says, like, if you're looking for Passim booking, email me here. Don't contact me on this. It's like, well, he's making it clear. But some of the things, like So Far Sounds, like, they have their whole application process through their website. And if they're artists wanting to play that, I totally encourage them to go ahead and do that. But they should like, that's not how I got in any of my shows. I played 12 of them, and I have yet to actually book one that way. Mm-hmm. Like, I double team. I send the same message essentially to their Facebook, their city chapter's Facebook page, and then also to the city's email address. And then I'd see whichever one gets back to me first. And it varies, but it's actually probably more often the Facebook one that gets back to me first.
The real question, to circle back right quick, Do you like poutine?
I do like poutine.
Because that was mentioned, and I need to know.
I just left it out there. I was burying the headline. I didn't have it when I went to Canada, actually. I had some really great gyros in Greektown. But, yeah, like, when I was in Calgary years ago, I got some poutine. So I've had the actual thing, and it is delicious. I mean, I wouldn't recommend eating it often. I'm sure it's very unhealthy. Like, and that wouldn't be a great tour food, I wouldn't think. Oh. But
speaking of which, what are foods that you should definitely avoid while on tour?
Oh, man. Almost anything heavy, I would say. Like, I try, like, you know, that might not be the best time to get, like, the double quarter pounder and supersized fries or whatever they're calling them now and things like that. Like, you're going to be in the car for a long time. Like, I try to tend toward, like, sandwiches and wraps that have a lot of vegetables and things, because that way, yeah, you just don't feel awful or dozy. You don't want to be feeling dozy when you're making a long drive.
Is there something that you, like, gravitate towards first when you're on the road? Like, for us, this is really weird, but we know that all sheets bathrooms are generally a safe bet.
Oh, yeah.
when we're driving, or, like, for me, if I stop at grocery stores a lot, because I'll pick up just, like, and Emily Barnes said the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, you just pick up things of berries, or you pick up things of fruit, or those little baby pouches that you suck the yogurt out of, or the applesauce, which is really fun to do as an adult.
Sure.
Highly recommend it for anyone who hasn't done it. Is there something that you sort of, is your sort of safe go to, or are you hey, look, there's a local diner, let's try it out?
Well, it depends on, like, how crunched I am for time. Like, one of the things I pretty much always have, like, a stock of snacks that are gonna be, like, really shelf stable that I bring with me. Like, I pretty much always have either, like, Kind bars or Clif bars, or RX bars aren't bad. They don't taste as good, but they're, you know, they'll work and in a pinch. And like, apples are some things I tend to take. I had my car broken into, someone stole some things out of my car in Indianapolis when I was there some years ago. And what's really weird, though, is that so they took, like, my merch case, which, I mean, so someone just wound up with a bunch of, like, Matt Wheeler and Vintage Heart, like, shirts.
Not the advertising you were hoping for.
And maybe 10 bucks and change or something, but so they took things like the GPS, like $17 GPS or something. But what's really weird is that they also took, like, my sunscreen, yeah, my hand sanitizer, and two Granny Smith apples I had in the door. So apparently, like, yeah, you hear about bands getting, like, their Stratocasters and amps stolen. Like,
that just,
I had, like, Granny Smith apples stolen.
That, like, just sounds like somebody just wanted to violate you.
It's like
I don't want the money. I just want you, like, to feel bad,
like,
about,
yeah,
yourself.
And there wasn't any damage to the car, so I still don't know for sure if I somehow, like, hit the fob and, like, accidentally left it unlocked, but someone helped themselves in my car and decided to take my apples. So, I mean, it's like, okay, it's just, like, anything that seemed like it'd be of any kind of value, I guess. Well, it's a little bit of a sidetrack, but yeah, I mean, so as far as, like, the types of places I tend to stop, I mean, like, Subway tends to be a place I like to go. I like Jimmy John's as well. like something like that, as opposed to like, I try to avoid too many like fries, a burger sometimes, but yeah. I mean, I don't try to eat too abnormally from what I normally would. Mm-hmm. I mean, I pretty much always have water with me as well. I mean, when I'm making a long drive, it's pretty much always solo, and I pretty much always stop as few times as possible. Mm-hmm. Like going to St. Louis, I think I stopped maybe twice. I think twice. I played in, like, I got myself on the bus in Pennsylvania, hopped in the car, and drove 12-ish hours or so to St. Louis and played a show that evening. Thankfully, I gained an hour going into the central time zone, which helped. But yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, make like one or two stops and just make them as quick as possible. The thing about the local diner is like, if I have time, sure, that's great. You know, if I'm in the city, I'm visiting like say New York City or something, like I want to go to Cat's Deli if I can, you know, or whatever the regional flavor is. Like if I'm going to someplace with like a really distinctive you know, culinary tradition or something that you have to get there, I'm probably not going to stop at like Wendy's.
If you're going to New Orleans,
yeah,
and you're going to a fast food restaurant, it's just sacrilege.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I did go to a Jack in the Box in Nashville because I don't think I'd ever had Jack in the Box before.
There's a really weird, where were we? Kingsport. There's like a hot dog fast food drive through thing in Kingsport. We didn't go, but apparently that's the place to be if you're Kingsport. Is like a little, it's just, you go in one way, you go around this really tiny building, and I think it's hot dogs.
Okay.
And that's, I don't know, thing. I feel like hot dog is a really hard thing to eat as fast food.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what you get as toppings. I mean, if you keep it really simple, you're probably okay, but if you get like a chili dog, like, you're just asking to have your clothes all stained up if you're going to eat that while you're driving. But was it Cookout by any chance?
Oh, man. Maybe. Cookout is
fantastic. Yeah. But that's like a Southern chain.
It might have, I don't know if it was a chain or if it was like a mom and pop type thing.
Did it have a lot of like mirrors all over the outside?
Man, I don't know. It was 2 or 3 years ago.
I just think Cookout's not really known for their hot dogs. So I would assume.
No.
I think this place just did. They're known
more for hamburgers. They do have hot dogs.
Also, you can get. Quick aside, also not sponsored by Cookout, but you can get a burger and two sides for like $6. It's a great deal.
We'll have to.
And you can put like slaw and chili on anything. Yeah, as
we're
well.
Probably the most advertiser friendly podcast, just because we will shout you out of the goodness of our hearts.
We're gonna have
if you're
to,
listening, Cookout, then please, you know, send us some gift cards.
We're gonna have to at the end of the podcast be like, and we were not sponsored by this list of people, but we love them anyway.
We're talking about food, so that's gonna come up, I guess.
Going off the trend of just like, you know, cities with certain, you know, cooking, what they're known for their food or that kind of stuff. I'm kind of curious, like, what city have you visited that surprised you the most with their scene? Because I think a lot of people who come through York and Lancaster, you know, they wouldn't really expect us to have a big art scene here, but there actually is a really nice one here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what other cities have you visited that really surprised you, I'd say?
Pittsburgh would probably have to be one that I'd say. The first time I ever was there was, I guess it was like the beginning of last year. And of course, like, I made the pilgrimage to, you know, the Heinz Museum and saw the, you know, Mr. Rogers display, and I went to Permane Brothers, the original one, because, you know, I would, again, it's like, I could have went to Wendy's, but no, I'm gonna go to the first Permane Brothers and sit right at the grill and, you know, drink it all in. But with Pittsburgh, I found it was really interesting. Like, it has so many different individual scenes. Like, it's a big city, but it doesn't feel like it because it's so geographically isolated, the different neighborhoods are. And they have like, you know, sharp cliffs and, you know, bridges and tunnels in the city.
Steepest incline in the United States, I think, is in Pittsburgh. Yeah.
Yeah. They have those like funicular things, which you usually only see in like, you know, in the Alps and things,
but
they act, yeah, it's like a cable car, except for it's actually attached to the ground and it just like, you know, goes up the side of the hill. Yeah, I mean, I've played there 2 times now, and it just seems like they have a lot of good things going on, you know, a good creative scene. Like, the best way I could put it, I guess, is, like, I didn't really have any expectations for Pittsburgh at all, one way or the other, and I just found it really charming. And also kind of hard to drive around, because the lane changes are fast, and it's very, very hilly. Mountainous, even. But
I did it last summer, and I was, after having lived in Morgantown for a while, it was surprisingly easy because I like to think that Morgantown, West Virginia is Pittsburgh without guardrails.
Yeah. Oh. I could see that.
So afterwards, because I was so nervous, we decided like, hey, let's go to Pittsburgh. It's an hour from Morgantown. And I was so nervous driving up there because I was like, this is going to be a disaster. Mm-hmm. I'm not a great driver. I hadn't driven in a city before.
Yeah.
And I was surprisingly okay.
I think Morgantown needs to make that their city motto. Like, you know, Pittsburgh without guardrails.
And lots of potholes.
Well, yeah, any of those, when they get the weather like that, you kind of expect it, I guess. But
yeah.
As far as one other surprising scene, one that maybe the most surprising one I found, it's just totally middle of nowhere, is this little town called Thomas, West Virginia.
Uh-huh. Isn't that Purple Fiddle?
It's the home of the Purple Fiddle, which is, it's, I don't know if I call it an unassuming venue. Like, it's got a good stage area, and it's, you know, it's got a cool feel, but you know, they get some really good acts coming through there. Apparently, Avett Brothers played it early on, and I heard some legend that perhaps Nora Jones had played there way back. But I mean, yeah, like it's always a great time to play. And even though the town's population is like 600, like they're fairly close to some of the ski resorts, and so they get a lot of tourist traffic. And I was there in February last year, I think, and they had it was like 60 degrees outside. It was supposed to be ski season, and like people weren't able to ski much. I mean, like they have the manufactured snow, but they're, you know, it, people were like, what else can we do? And Thomas is like really charming, because it's like this little 4 or 5 blocks of like Williamsburg, Brooklyn, crossed with Austin, just like stuck in the middle of West Virginia. Because you've got, there's a Purple Fiddle itself, which has its own quirky charm. And then, like, on the same street, they've got, it's like this artisans collective where one artist I met, she upcycles leather jackets into, like, wallets and stuff. And I got a business card holder from her. They have maybe the coolest little cafe I've ever been to called Tip Top. I've got a little Hydra flask that I bought there. But, it's like they've got these handmade chocolates, and they've got when you sit down like to your avocado toast or whatever you got, they have books and things around and like games, but they also have like they had an old school Game Boy with Tetris in it. So there I am, like, you know, enjoying my breakfast, and you know, playing Tetris on the Game Boy. It's like, you know, and a bunch of other cool, they have some other galleries and things. So yeah, like that's a place I would never have expected to have a scene, and somehow it's like this little oasis. Like you can't even get cell reception like much of the way down there. Like your GPS gets lost, and yeah, it's like when you find it, it's like the clouds clear and you're in this wonderful little haven.
So I guess another thing I wanted to talk to you about is the whole playing for free. At what point, I'm assuming in the beginning there was a time where you were playing free shows.
Oh yeah.
At what point in your career were you, are you at a point in your career where you're adamant about a guarantee?
I mean, it's rare that I play a free show at this point. Sometimes, like, certain times festivals or, like, a charity event might work out that way. I know in June I'm going to be playing, like, Relay for Life Lancaster. Mm-hmm. Like, it's for a cancer survivor's dinner. I'm basically background music. Mm-hmm. I totally know the deal. It's totally okay. It's okay. I don't plan to sell any CDs. It's mm-hmm. like, I'm glad you guys are here. Glad you fought hard and you've made it to this point. And here are some songs. But yeah, there's no question. Like, I started off... Man, I didn't really start playing shows out until about, regularly until, like, 2012. I'm 38. That means that I started when people were basically, like, people usually hang it up. Like, they're ready to, like, quit their punk band and start, like, a family. And, like, I waited until I had a family. And I'm like, I think I'm going to start playing some shows. Because starting in a different place, I guess, than some. But, yeah, some of the first shows, like, I remember playing at Javati's, I still don't know how to pronounce that place, in Ephrata. That was, like, my first solo show out. And then the Coffee Company and Chestnut Hill Cafe in Lancaster. Like, those were essentially, like, the you know, we like to have live music in the cafe. maybe we have a PA to set up for you. Do your thing. Let's kind of DIY. See if you can make some tips. And those are good for cutting my teeth. But I mean, I generally don't do those now. I've tried over the years to like raise the quality of shows that I play that way. And it does happen that most of the ones that I'm playing do have at least some kind of guarantee. But that's part of the reason too, why like, while I have a band, Matt Wheeler and Vintage Hearts, my solo project, that's not really solo, I like to say, we're a 4-piece band, but like 70% or so of my shows, I actually play solo. Because like the math usually works out a lot better if I don't have to divide it over several people. Like, you know, even if it's like an opening slot and I'm getting paid like $75, it's like solo, that's not bad. But if it's like, you know, a 4-piece band and we're splitting $75, that doesn't go very far. So yeah, like it still greatly varies. And I will say it was kind of odd for me at first, you know, when people would ask if I could play an event and they'd be like, so what's your rate? I'm like, like you don't want to be the first one to put a number out there, but you kind of like, you know, like I know there are at least a few times when I threw out a number and places are like, oh yeah, we can definitely do that. I'm like, rats, I should have went higher. There was at least one time I remember I said like, oh, we could do it for $200. And it was this summer concert series this library did. And they're like, okay, we'll get back to you. And they're like, turns out we can do $400. I'm like, I like the way this negotiation is going. It's
like, I feel like I questioned their tactics.
Yeah, I was about to say, that sounds like a bad idea on their part.
It's like, if I turn you down and come back to you in like a few weeks, does that mean we can do like 800? Yeah, I mean, some places have a budget, and it's hard to know who has a budget and who doesn't. But yeah, it's it's being a freelancer. I mean, you know, some venues, you know, if you play an opening slot or a headlining slot, you know what you're going to get. So far, sound shows, they have a standard guarantee or a professional video that they do. So yeah, and when I put any of those tours, I try to like make sure that it's, you know, there's at least one or two anchor dates where it's going to pay for the tour as best as possible. And, you know, if I'm playing for a little lower amount, but it's like with, you know, at a good venue or with a band I wanted to have a chance to play with or something, then I can deal with it. But that's a very long rambling answer to your question, I know.
No, that's, I mean, that's the stuff we're looking for. As far as merch goes, what are you experiencing with merch sales? Are you having good luck with merch sales? What are you typically selling?
Well, I mean, at this point, at least as of the time we're recording this, CDs seem like they still sell pretty well. And although I think it's probably getting to a point where like a person might buy a CD more or less as like a memento from the show, you know, like so they have something like to take with them if they had a good experience. I've definitely, like, I have 3 albums, 2 full-length albums, and there's 1 4-song EP. And I found that I started bundling them, like, where normally it's, like, $10, $4, $10, but you can get all 3 for $20. Like, so I'll mention the $20 bundle from Stage, and like, I sell more of the bundles than I do in individual CDs, which is nice. You know, I think, like, you know, I might have sold that person 1 $4 CD otherwise, and they bought $20 worth. So yeah, CDs still sell pretty well. T-shirts, well, it helps that we've got a really cool graphic on ours.
I have one.
I know, Hannah, you bought one. So I remember you went.
We took a picture. Last
time I was at the Thought Lot. I think you actually put it on and you took a picture. And you know, I always enjoy when people like share pictures where they're wearing one of our Matt Wheeler and Vintage Heart shirts. Like, you know, sometimes it'll be like other places in the world. Like they'll be in like South America or something. On top of a mountain, and here they are wearing the Matt Wheeler Vintage Heart shirts. Like, that's cool. So yeah, CDs and shirts. Those are the main things that I do sell. I do have these limited edition like vinyl singles that I made with this company called Least of All up in Brooklyn. Like, they have this 50s era vinyl lathe, and they had me in for an office session. I played 16 songs, and he like basically has like modern microphones hooked up to this vinyl lathe, and it just, you know, he puts the blank on, drops the needle, and then points, and you know, it's like you're on, and you know, when he's done, he just puts a sticker on it, and puts it in a package, and there's that one take, the only record of it. So whatever I said at the beginning, that's the only recording of that. So those, not everyone, like a lot of people, I think it just flies over their heads and that's perfectly okay. But it seems like every few shows I'll have someone be like, whoa, I love that idea. I think I got to get one of those. So I only have so many. So that's an unusual thing I have as far as merch. I haven't branched out much beyond those things except for, I have stickers. They have the same logo as the shirt, but I get them through Sticker Mule, which is like they make good quality work. It's not always the cheapest, but they can do short runs for you, and I'll get like 50 or 100 at a time, and it works well for me. So
I didn't know about this company. I'm a big proponent of stickers.
Yes, Sticker Mule is fantastic. I made the original run of the stickers on an app from my phone, maybe on lunch break. Like, it was so simple. And I definitely would recommend them, as far as, an easy way to get those things done. Also, you didn't ask about this, but it's kind of back to Sam's question about apps, or in this case, companies that are helpful. Moo, I don't think I have any business cards with me, or I'd show you all, but they make really like good quality business cards. And I got the ones with like the rounded edges, and it's like it has the...
I have heard of this.
Has pictures on both sides. And I don't know how many people I've had being like, wow, this is a really nice business card. And it's like, this is one they're actually going to keep and probably look up what's on it. They cost a little more than, say, Vistaprint. Maybe a lot more per card, but they're totally worth it. And they even have these cool card holders where you open it up and then it like fans out. And so anyway, so Moo is fantastic. They're a British company, but it's like their design aesthetics are similar to, say, like Apple. I'd say they're like the Apple of business cards. So yeah, spend a little more and get Moo business cards and people will notice, I would say. So I don't remember what the original question was in this case.
But I don't remember either, but that's okay because it's all about just getting the information out there.
It can be meandering. You asked me about merch, that's right.
Yeah, okay. I always find merch to be an interesting thing because, Shawan Rice.
Yes, right? Shawan and the Wonton.
Shawan and the Wonton. She just released some new stuff too on Spotify that's like sort of more techno-ish.
Okay.
If you haven't listened to it, you should definitely
should. I should look her up.
But she always has like really great ideas for new merch. I think she makes like hand-stitched lyric books or something.
Yeah.
But I always love seeing, unique merch things and t-shirts and stickers. I'm a sucker for stickers. If you're a band that doesn't have stickers, you're doing it wrong because I can't
you need some stickers
because
in your life.
It's the easiest marketing.
We've just isolated any band that might want to come on in the future. We're not worthy of the podcast. We don't have stickers yet.
Okay. If you don't have stickers, hit us up. We'll make a charitable donation.
Go to Sticker Mule, get some made up and then we'll talk.
But it's such an amazing marketing tool because you put them wherever and you see a sticker on somebody's laptop and then you're like, oh, I want to look this up. Or you see it on a bathroom door and you're like, oh, I want to look this up. I think that that's probably where I've discovered a significant amount of not even just, bands, but businesses and shops and things like that, because it's like, oh, this is a really interesting thing. Maybe I'm too invested in stickers. Maybe other people don't care, but stickers make me really happy.
I'd say about six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Yeah. And I mean, in my case, of course it costs me to make them. I make them free. So if nothing else, if someone's like, and like looking at the merch, I'm like, oh man, I don't know if I can buy anything. It's like, want a sticker? Oh, sure. We've got young people, it's like, hey, have a sticker.
And people will use it. They'll put it on something.
Yeah. Other musicians will put it on their instrument case and then the other bands will see it. And, as far as unusual merch, one of the more unusual things I've seen is, my friend, Nick, Hofstadter. I'm trying to remember his last name. He goes by Nick West, but anyway, he's from the band Shiloh Hill from North Carolina, and he is apparently deathly afraid of breaking a string playing guitar. So he changes his guitar strings like almost every show. And they play a fair amount, but so he has all these extra strings. He started making like bracelets and like, you know, like jewelry out of them. And which is cool because then he sells it as merch.
Yeah.
Alongside their CDs and such. So, I mean, that's a good creative reuse because otherwise, like, if he's not going to use them anymore, mm-hmm. why not? So.
Okay, so we're at about 50 minutes.
Yeah, it's about plug time.
Well, I want to ask my final question.
That's fine. We just don't want to exceed an hour.
So what I've been trying to end these on is, are there any musicians that you've been listening to lately that you would recommend for our listeners to go and check out?
Well, I tend to listen to Spotify a lot, and that's really great because there's no barrier to, like, you know, you hear, you just said the thing about Siobhan and her projects with apparently Stardog.
Yes. Yep.
Something like that. Like, I just went ahead and added it to my listen list just now. Man, some things I've really been digging a lot recently. I mean, I tend to have some things I come back to. I mean, anything about Kings of Convenience. They're a Norwegian duo that, like, I discovered them a while back. And, like, I had one of their albums for a while. And then I had a dream, actually, right before I went on my New England tour in 2014, that I was on stage with them singing one of their songs that has really simple lyrics, but I couldn't remember the lyrics. I was, like, kicking myself. And for some reason, I decided then on my trip up to New England, I listened to their entire discography, except for the one remix album, front to back. And I've just been like a big fan of theirs ever since. And it's two guys and two guitars generally. They have strings sometimes, but they make so much out of the sound. John Mark McMillan and Josh Garrels, a couple of my favorite songwriters. Josh Ritter, Colin Malloy and the Decemberists. I haven't checked out their new album too much, but they've got some... they've got some good stuff, and I saw Colin Malloy solo over the Keswick a while back, and that was like his like stage banter style. Like, his and Josh Ritter's are like basically what I pattern mine after. As far as other stuff, like I listen to a lot of Explosions in the Sky, which is totally opposite from when, like, I'm usually into like very lyrically driven like acoustic stuff with like strings, and they are instrumental post rock. Like, if you've ever seen the movie Friday Night Lights, you've heard at least some of their music. They did the score to the movie, or at least a good bit of it. And but yeah, it's like this lyrical style. It's wonderful. And but yeah, and also pretty much anything that Chris Thiele is part of, you know, Punch Brothers or Nickel Creek.
I'm a huge Nickel Creek fan.
Or yeah, I mean, but I also really like his like he has a whole yeah, I have it on vinyl. It's a album of him playing. Bach. It's like sonatas and partitas, just solo mandolin the whole way, but it's stunning stuff.
I know he did a session with Yo-Yo Ma and a couple of other classical trained artists, Edgar, and that was a really fun album to listen to as well.
Yeah.
Like, I can't remember. It was the something something sessions. Like, it was just a one-time deal, but...
I was going to say Edgar Winter, but I don't think that's who it is. It's Edgar someone was part of it. And then, yeah, there was like four of them, and he did another one with like Brad Meldow. He did one with Michael Daves. Like, he is very prolific, but yeah, like, his instrumental stuff is fantastic as well. And yeah, I mean, I like to, like, well, one of Yo-Yo Ma's albums, he's got one where it's like it's a bunch of it's him playing Bach like unaccompanied, and that's another one like I put on in the background a lot. Glenn Gould, his 1955 Goldberg variations. So yeah, I'm kind of all over the map, but I mean, like, Chris Thiele actually talked about how, like, that album by Glenn Gould, like, his grandmother played it for him and it turned him on to classical music. And so I went back and listened to that, and then also discovered Chris Thiele's own, like, classical work. And it was like, wow. So you can really fall through a rabbit hole when it comes to Spotify, but it's a good thing. Man, as far as, like, other favorites, maybe people don't know about, Great Lake Swimmers, one of my favorite bands. They're from Toronto area, and especially the new stuff where it's like they're like an acoustic like lyric driven band, but like some of their most recent songs, like, they have no guitar in them at all. Like, it's all like woodwinds or like harp and flute or something like that. Rivers and Robots is fantastic. Lighthouse and the Wailers is a band I got a chance to play with recently, and they were, rediscovered their music and, you know, really enjoyed their new stuff as well. So, yeah, I'm sure that, I mean, Max Garcia Conover is a friend of mine who, like, as far as obscure artists, like, he does a really unusual, he has an unusual kind of style, like a one-man band, like, really introspective. He's got an unusual voice, you know. Like, if you like The Tallest Man on Earth, I think that's what he calls it, then you might like, you know, Max Garcia Conover, too. So, yeah, man. I mean, there's so many other artists I could... Three Strands, a friend of mine, he's doing some really thoughtful work here recently, too. So, yeah, that was very meandering. But, yeah, there's a bunch of... I mean, those are all artists that I like to listen to. And, yeah, anyone wants, you can follow my profile on Spotify and see what I'm listening to as well.
Is there any, that's not the right question. where can people find you if they want to hear more about you and your music?
Sure. Well, mattwheeleronline.com is my website. And you know, I haven't been updating that as faithfully as maybe I should, because honestly, social media tends to be easier sometimes. But, of course, if people look on Facebook, I'm quite active there. You look up Matt Wheeler or Matt Wheeler and Vintage Heart, which is the band. I'm also very active on Instagram, especially when I'm touring, at Matt Wheeler VH, Twitter as well. So those are the main places. And mattwheeleronline.com/shows is a good place for people to see, you know, all the many places that I'm playing.
And that concludes our interview with Matt Wheeler. We hope you guys enjoyed. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and drop a rating if you can. And follow us on Instagram at Flatnickel Podcast to see all the behind-the-scenes goodness that we post. And we'll see you next week.